Hello, friends, and welcome back to this week's episode of Like Anime, specifically episode 28. We're back here. My name's George. With me, as always, is Tony.
Yes, I am Tony. And now for our Hispanic listeners, I'm going to translate everything George just said into Spanish. Hola, amigos, y bienvenidos. I'm just kidding.
How do you say in Spanish?
I'm not sure. I think it's just un.
Anime?
I think, I don't know. I'm trying to think if I've ever heard someone say in Spanish. Yeah, it's just like I think.
All right. Well, that'll remain a mystery to me. We're back again. We talk about anime. We talk about what's currently airing, what we're watching. Can't watch everything, nor would we want to. But
speak for yourself.
I mean, you were watching almost not everything, but you were watching a giant chunk of this season's anime. I mean, and
there are still shows that from spring that are not available on any services or anything that I want to watch.
Yeah.
There's at least a couple of them.
I'm with you on that.
But yeah, there's also a lot of shows that, you know, I didn't watch at all, nor did I want to.
Yeah, sometimes you can just tell. Not for you. And you got to respect yourself. And that goes out to all the listeners. But anyway.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yep.
U-M-L-I-K-E-A-N-I-M-E.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, that's hard to fit in. All right, we'll just keep rambling if we don't.
I'm just going to keep derailing. I'm in that sort of mood tonight.
Yep, I can already tell.
Yep.
But why don't we?
I told you I had two beers before I came tonight, right?
Strap in, folks. Here we go. Like the short episode promise is out the window.
All right, George, can we move on? Let's get to Super Cub, episode 10.
Let's rev our Super Cubs and head on over to
Super
that
Cub.
Town they live in.
Super Cub, episode 10 out of 12. So there's two more left. This episode is titled Snow.
No kidding.
And it's a good title, I guess, for this episode.
Because, I mean, it's apt.
Yeah. Because there's snow. And the girls play in the snow with their Super Cubs.
Yes, they get snow chains, or Reiko has some.
That happens.
She's like, I have snow chains. Uh-huh. Well, it's kind of funny when Reiko first calls Koguma. She's like, it's snowing. Koguma's like, I'm not going anywhere. And then Reiko calls and's like, come over now.
Get over here now.
And she's like, no. And then she tells her what she has.
And Koguma slides down a hill and almost dies.
Yeah. That too, yeah. They both fell off their cubs while...
Well, when they were horsing around.
Oh, yeah.
But no, when she was on her way over to Reiko's, she went down a hill and she was like stepping on her brakes and like just sliding.
Remember? I forgot that part.
Almost slid into the intersection.
Nice.
Yeah. So this episode was pretty much cute girls doing cute things. I sort of expected this show to be more of this. It's nice that they're finally getting around to it in episode 10 of 12.
Yes, finally getting around to not much of anything.
Right. That's what I wanted it to be. That's what I expected it to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I guess because of things that have led us, you know, things earlier on in the show, I was expecting a little more based on what they laid out.
Yeah.
But yes, I my notes just say snow chains. They have fun in the snow, driving around, you know, doing donuts and whatnot. Then they have some coffee, of course, at She's parents' place or whatever. And then, well, it's funny you say that is cute girls doing cute things, because, oh my God, this episode ends in a cliffhanger. She goes out by herself and it's snowing and it's dark and she falls down or so. I don't know what happened.
But yeah.
She had an accident and she is in peril, and that's it just casually ended on that.
Yeah. Cliffhanger. The end of the episode, she's like laying on the ground. Was she like in a creek or something? Was there running water there or something?
It seemed like it. Yeah. She was like, couldn't get up.
Tuskete. You know.
She called Koguma, or managed to call Koguma, and so it was almost like, you thought it was just, you know, going to be a relaxing snow-filled adventure. There's danger afoot, but it'll probably be resolved immediately in the next episode. But
probably,
yeah, that's really all I got on that one.
Yeah, that's more than all I got. All right, so next up we've got So I'm a Spider, So What. All right, now, folks, you're going to need to strap in, because there's a fair amount that happens in this. So we're back to Kumiko time, which is good.
Nice.
Because we love Kumiko.
Yeah.
So the very beginning pre-credit scene is like this funny little bit that Kumiko does where she's sort of playing a news reporter or something, like, you know, the frontline reporters that you see from like the Iraq War or whatever. I don't know. Whatever war when you were a kid that you saw on TV.
The Great Spider War is what I endured.
So, you know, she does this little bit and it's funny and cute. And then we get credits and then back to it. And Kumiko has decided that she's going to get involved in this war that she accidentally started. Of course, she's going to be on the side of the baby bloodsucker who she has taken a liking to for some reason. And, you know, all the people that have been worshiping her and giving her free stuff for a while now, you know, she's on that side. Anyway, and so humans are worth like a lot more XP than monsters are. So she just, you know, goes around and kills a bunch of humans to gain a bunch of XP.
Sweet.
Yeah. So she's happy about that, you know, farming the XP. So after a little while of that, she decides to sort of use her telepathy thing to check in and see what Demon Lord Ariel is up to. That's the Demon Lord's name. I don't know that I've said it before, but I thought I should start saying it now because it's easier to refer to her as Ariel than Demon Lord. So, yeah, so she checks in to see what Demon Lord Ariel's up to, and Ariel is currently battling a huge earth dragon in a cave somewhere for unknown reasons. Not really sure why. But that's what she's doing. And then after Ariel finishes off the Earth Dragon, Administrator Ghouli Ghouli shows up and they sort of have a conversation. Before that, I forgot. Yeah, so Kumiko, she has that multiple mind thing, right? We've talked about before. She got the two magic minds and then the body mind thing and then her own mind. So body mind is in Ariel now because it transferred from Mother, remember?
Yeah.
Anyway, and it's been like working away at her, and now it's starting to like affect her, like she's saying things that sound like Kumiko now, which is kind of funny and cute. Anyway, so after that, then Ghouli Ghouli shows up and basically tells Ariel what's happening, that there's this, you know, parasite inside her, you know, parasitic mind inside her that's sort of trying to weaken her soul, but because she has such high resistance to it, instead, they're starting to just blend together, her and Kumiko's body mind. He basically just shows up to say that. And then he says, hey, do you need a lift anywhere? Because I can teleport. Oh, and then he drops her like 10 feet away from Kumiko, who had just checked in on her and knew that she was far away and busy fighting a dragon and stuff. So Kumiko's a little surprised by that and now has to try and deal with Ariel. So it's not really much of a battle. Kumiko is just basically jumping around trying to dodge everything. And when she can't, she tries to make sure that she gets knocked into humans so that she kills them and gets their XP so that then she levels up and regenerates. Right?
Nice.
So, yeah, that's kind of her battle strategy. And then this kid shows up and says, hey, you arachnids, fight me. And they both stop and look at him. And Ariel seems a bit worried, and so Kumiko does her, appraisal thing, and realizes that this is the hero Julius, who is Shun's older brother, who was the hero until he died in the future.
But this is in the past.
This is in the past. It's Kumiko time.
Yes. Yeah. We're just getting it straight.
Yeah. It's weird to say he died in the future because that's past tense, and I'm talking about the future. But you know. Anyway,
and everyone dies in the future.
Yeah, but has everyone died in the future?
That's true.
Past tense, right?
It's a little
different. So Ariel is kind of on edge because she's a demon lord and he's a hero. And heroes, even if they aren't really that powerful, have more power against demon lords, I guess, or something, is sort of how it's explained. Anyway, so she's sort of on edge because Julius is there, and the fight between her and Kumiko has basically stopped. And then Julius does something, becomes distracted or something, and then Ariel sees her opportunity to attack Kumiko again and uses some sort of magic. What was it called? I forget. There's all these different types of magic. Anyway, it's the one type of magic that you can't, your immortality can't regenerate from, because it doesn't destroy your soul, but it erodes it or something like that. I don't remember what it is. There was some explanation for it. But anyway, so abyss magic, that's what it's called. And yeah, if Kumiko gets hit by this, then do you need a coaster?
Yeah, there probably is, but
we're just way in the back.
We can I shoved a bunch of crap in there.
Well, crap was in the toilet, George. That's why it's called the crapper. Where was I?
Ariel. Well, she used the abyss magic.
Oh, yes. And all right,
then
so,
something happens.
Yes, Ariel uses some abyss magic to attack Kumiko while Julius is momentarily distracted, hoping that she can get rid of Kumiko, and then she can maybe try and deal with Julius. But she wouldn't be able to deal with Julius while Kumiko was messing with her, basically.
Hmm.
Anyway, and it looks like Kumiko might have been hit by the abyss magic, but... I mean, are we really worried? Do we think that they're getting rid of everyone's favorite character at
well,
this
she's
point?
She's also immortal, right?
I just explained that abyss magic...
Oh, okay.
Immortality doesn't work against abyss magic because it disintegrates the soul. Rather than destroying it, it sort of disintegrates it and then like just makes it sort of go away or something. Right?
I see.
So yes, if you get hit by abyss magic, then being immortal doesn't really matter.
Okay. Got it.
As was explained in the show anyway. So anyway, yeah, it looks like Kumiko gets hit, but what are the chances that the series is going to end now when we've got at least two more episodes left this season and we're only in like volume 5 or 6, I think. Maybe we're in volume 6 now.
And the light novel's still going.
Yeah, there's like 14 something volumes, I think. So like that.
So
yeah, chances are Kumiko's going to be all right. But we don't know because we switch back to Shun time. It's Shun time. I don't know. That sounded better in my head.
I don't know. It's not as cool as Kumiko time, but carry on.
Anyway, yeah, so we go back to Shun and Sensei. Do I even have notes about this? Yeah, so cut back to Shun and Hugo and Sensei and Sophia. And Shun and Hugo both declare their intent to fight one-on-one and each asks their respective parties to let them fight each other without interfering. So Hugo basically says to Sophia, no, let me fight him one-on-one. And Shun says to Sensei and all of the other reincarnations that have shown up there, same thing, basically. So they're going to fight it out. And then the episode basically ends. So I've sort of been looking forward to this battle. Like, I mean, I'm not really into battle anime, but sort of been looking forward to this battle between Kumiko and Ariel for a while now. Like, knew it was coming at some point this season, but it's really not that action packed or exciting or anything. Like, Nothing much really happens. It feels like this part of the story has been stretched. I don't know if they wrote it too fast and then they're like, oh, we got two more episodes to go. We're going to have to stretch this out or I don't know. I have no explanation, but it feels really like slow and not really very well paced. Despite there being like a lot of things happen, but like story-wise, nothing actually happens, right?
Yeah.
So not
as engaging as you would have hoped.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's, what, 3 episodes left? Is that what I said? 22 of 24. So there's 2 episodes
left.
2
more. Yeah. Which makes sense. A lot of them are.
And so I assume that, like, these remaining 2 episodes are just going to be sort of split between these 2 battles. And then... you know, someone wins and it ends the season or whatever. But yeah, we're basically, you know, taking 2 battles and spreading it out across like 4 episodes. So
your favorite
is My Hero next or what? No.
That would have been a great segue.
I thought I was talking about My Hero for a second there. I was confused. I'm sorry.
But I do, if you're ready, I do have a segue for you. On that.
Go ahead and segue.
Because those Snow White notes show that you have dropped. I'm still watching. did something that I did not expect, because now after this episode, there's only one more left of that show, and I was thinking, like, they're not gonna get to Setsu's solo performance till the very last episode watch. But no, halfway point of this episode, he starts his performance.
Point even. All right.
And it ends, I think we probably see like half his performance. It ends on like kind of a cliffhanger.
So halfway through this episode, he starts his performance and it takes up the second half of the episode. Oh God.
But I mean, I don't know if that runtime is accurate, but it just felt that way, I guess. But I mean, not in a bad way, but just like that's how it was. The episode was partitioned.
All right.
But anyway, let's get into that. So what I didn't mention last week is that last week's episode ended on a cliffhanger. I don't know his name, but he's the guy that is on the group that won first place, and so he's kind of a he's a bit reserved, and you know everyone thinks he looks like a puppy dog. I guess he just looks green, young and cute or whatever.
Bunch of Shotokans, huh? Oh, I forgot to mention the Shotokan jokes from Spider, but anyway, continue. I'll cover it some other time. It was kind of funny.
Okay, what is a Shotokan?
Shotokan.
Shota. That does sound familiar.
I think that's right. It's basically like the reverse of a lolicon, or emoticon. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what an emoticon is.
Yeah. Okay, a male version.
Yeah. Well, the reverse of that. So yeah, a boy, young boy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's Shota. That fits. Anyway, so at the it was a cliffhanger last week with him during his performance. He breaks a string like mid performance, and it kind of ended on like, oh my god, he like sort of freezes, and then this episode picks up with that, and there's like a lull where he's like, what do I do? And then one of the judges is about to like call it, and then he keeps playing, and he just plays with the two remaining strings, and he manages to win over the crowd, but he's like feels defeated and shameful at the end because a string broke, and you know it reflects on your care of the instrument. So you know it'll be you know he'll most likely get low points for his overall performance, even though he did you know really good with what he had. That was kind of the first half of this episode.
Okay.
Which was interesting enough. I kind of like his character, like since he's not, I don't know how important he's going to be like going forward. I mean, we're about to end, but I'm hoping the show comes back. But yeah, he's cool. Like he's more reserved and thoughtful, whereas some of the other characters are either, I don't know, underwritten or just really loud and obnoxious. But after this, in the interim, Setsu is eating. He's eating the lunch that I don't know her. I'm so bad with the names in the show, but. He lives above this like restaurant, and there's this girl who's younger. She's not age appropriate for him. She's like a middle schooler or grade schooler or something like that, but she's really cute and she always makes him food. And there's just a scene where he's eating lunch, where he's eating a rice ball and he like takes a bite into it, and there's a thick, big old thick piece of salmon in it, and he's like, oh wow, like I'm lucky. And then he thinks back and he's like, oh yeah, recently the last rice ball I had, which he's not thinking this, but that she also brought him. He was like, you know, that was like, I'm having deja vu because I had, you know, a big old piece of salmon in that one too. And he's just an idiot and doesn't realize that like she really, you know, like fancies him and looks up to him and whatnot. So it was mildly funny. I was just yelling at the TV like, you're an idiot, Setsu.
You think like she has romantic type feelings for him, or
I think it's more of a big brother thing where like she just really likes him, you know, I don't think the show is gonna do, you know,
I thought it was more like that relationship seemed more like she was trying to take care of him because he doesn't really take care of himself very much or something, right?
I think so,
kind
yeah.
of the gist I got of
there's
that.
A little pity, but I think there's some I think there's something else there where she, I don't know, it seems like it's just her and her dad too, like she doesn't really seem to have a maternal presence, so she's kind of
I'm looking at the list of characters and I'm not sure which one.
She's sort of reprising that role, I think, and so I think there's like an element of like she's like you said taking care of him like a mother would, But then she also looks up to him as like a big bro kind of type. That's my take on it. But he's just so, I don't know what his deal is. Like, he's so dense. Like, he's not really played for like a klutz or anything, but maybe he's just so in his head and self possessed, you know, self, I don't know. Like, he's so in his own like world that he doesn't realize that she, you know, that there's, that's not a coincidence that he's getting hooked up with this, these awesome meals. Like, she cares about him and stuff. But I don't think it's a romantic thing is all I'm saying. But anyway, and so then shortly after this, he eats his lunch and then his mom shows up, which I'm not a huge fan of, but whatever. And she's basically forcefully trying to convince him to play in the style of his grandfather, like, one last time. She's not really asking him. She's telling him, but he's like, she gets him all riled up and she says something along the lines of like, people, you know, your grandfather was so unique and his playing was so incredible, but he always kept it like under wraps. He didn't like, you know, put himself out there to the masses, you know, like, and so, you know, his sound is going to fade and die if you don't, you know, if you don't carry on this torch. And it's also named the Matsuguro Cup after him. So, you know, you have to do it. But for some reason, this gets to him where he's like, you know, he really loves and appreciates his grandfather and his sound. And so he's like, it's not going to die. And so he starts his performance trying to emulate his grandfather. And like, you know, so you get all those scenes that you didn't like, which is people like, you know, commenting on it as he's playing and being like it's...
Oh, it's like... The cherry blossoms falling on the cedar in a fresh bed of snow next to a river with moss-covered rocks.
It was not so much that, but it was more like, I mean, you got the idea, but visually. But it was more like people were being like, oh, you can tell that he, you know, this isn't, you know, the tempo he's playing in isn't this like rushed, showy, you know, it's not like a lot of these, he doesn't play like his age, you know, he's playing like a more seasoned player. And, but then like people are like, despite that, he's, you know, not quite as fluid or whatever. But anyway, in his mind, then it kind of switches to him playing. And in his mind, you know, like you were just commenting on, sometimes people would like put that into words. But, you know, he's seeing all these waves and all this emotion that he's drawing on, trying to emulate his grandfather and like tap into that emotion. And while he's doing that, he kind of realizes that it's not, you know, it's not as genuine. And so he reaches a point like in his... From the point of view of his perspective while he's playing and trying to draw on his thoughts and his feelings, he kind of runs out. It kind of goes black. And he then like starts to think of like all the memories he's made in this season. You know, there's like in the very first episode, there's this girl we meet who I liked and this other boyfriend that she has that we never see again after that. But he thinks of them and he thinks of all the other... trying to think of their dang names. Yui. Yeah, Yui and Shuri and the other guys. I'm really bad with names on this show. But he starts to think of all the memories he's made in this television animated series. And so then he starts to play like himself, you know, and starts to draw. So like his performance midway switches and then it kind of, people are like, oh, and then it ends on that cliffhanger of like, how's he gonna finish it out? But it was an okay episode. I liked that they got to this performance, which means that some of the other key performances will be after his. So I appreciate in the least that they didn't like set it up exactly like the group competition where it's like, no, we gotta wait to see the main character last. So I'm sure there'll be something they'll play off of, you know, the performances that come after his and, you know, how they compare and the, there'll probably be some, you know, melodrama associated with that because I'm pretty sure we're going to have Mai Mai play. That hasn't been confirmed yet, so maybe I'm wrong on that, but I just hope she will at this point. And then there's the other kid, Soichi or something, that is the most anticipated of the judges and everyone that knows their shamisen stuff. So that's pretty much it. I'm looking forward. One more episode, and that's that.
Who's Mai's brother? Yeah, Soichi. That's
Mai's
brother.
Yeah, so
that's
him, yeah. Which is technically Setsu's adopted brother, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
We learned, last week.
Yeah.
So, okay. But I'm hoping Mai Mai plays as well. Nobody's really been talking about her. I mean, we have seen her in cutaways and stuff, but yeah, it's an okay show, and I, you know, I'm finishing it out. So that brings us to ONAs and shorts.
Yes, the ONAs and shorts block, which contains exactly one ONA and or short.
There was one hopeful entry that neither of us cared to watch.
Yes, Record of Ragnarok came out on Netflix this week, and neither of us wanted to watch it. Well, I mean, I watched like trailers and stuff and decided not to watch it. George, I think, just didn't have time to even watch the trailer or anything.
Yeah, but I heard some stuff, some bubbling things about it online that weren't very positive. So I was like, eh, you know, whatever.
So if you've seen it and you want to tell us about it, like we tell you about anime every week, get in the comments at whatever you're, however you're listening to this, there's probably something you can comment on. If you can't, you can go to YouTube, go to Twitter.
I don't know. We'll know you really care if you go out of your way to let us know about Record of Ragnarok.
That's true. You're like, well, normally I listen on Google Podcasts, which doesn't have a way to comment. So I came all the way here to YouTube, which is also owned by Google, but you know.
Such a long journey.
Anyway, yeah, so Eden is the only thing that we're covering in ONAs and shorts this week. This is episode 3 of 4. It all dropped on Netflix at the same time, but you know, I'm spreading it out week to week. In this episode, the Eden 1 AI, who we met last episode, reveals that the other person who was awoken is actually a guy named Dr. Fields, who we had seen some stuff of before. I got the impression anyway that he wasn't contemporary to the time that Sarah is in. And it turns out that's right. Anyway, so Sarah decides to go searching for Dr. Fields because at this point she believes that, you know, he has probably just been awoken just like she has or whatever. And while searching, she runs into Mom and Pop Robot and PJ, the little friendly little robot that kind of follows her everywhere.
And she's like in the cube or whatever at this point.
No, I mean, she leaves the cube to go search for Dr. Fields, who is not in Eden 3.
Oh, I see.
I think she might believe that he's in Eden 1 or something, but she doesn't really know where that is. So she's just kind of wandering about.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, and she runs into Mom and Pop Robot and PJ, the little, it's more like a pet for her, I guess, but her companion.
Okay.
Robot. And then they're out wandering aimlessly because none of them know where they're supposed to be going, basically. And they see this little, sort of dog-like robot that they sort of immediately recognize as some really antique sort of thing. And it seems to be carrying some food with it. Specifically apples, because that's the only food that exists in this world now, apparently. And they're like, well, why would that stupid, you know, antique dog robot need apples? So they decide to follow it, and they do. And they follow it to a sort of broken version of the big cube, which is, you know, has a sign in it that says Eden 0.
Prototype.
Yeah. So they go in there, and then the dog robot decides to play them a video of Dr. Fields talking. So now that they know that, now they know who Dr. Fields is. I don't know how they recognized him. Maybe he says he's Dr. Fields. I don't remember. Anyway, so I don't remember what he says in the video. The main thing that we get from them watching this video is that the date on it is 400 years in the past. So he's clearly dead. So he's not going to be much help in figuring out what the password is to resurrect the 35,000-ish humans that are still in hibernation.
Okay.
Anyway, and then so some bad robots show up and capture Sarah and the Robo family, and then they decide that they're going to reprogram the Robo family and destroy Sarah because, well, I guess first they take them back to Eden 3 where the boss of the bad robots is, and his name is Zero, by the way. That'll come up later. Anyway, yeah, order Sarah to be destroyed and all the robots to, you know, have their memory wiped and be reprogrammed. And after watching Ma and Pa Robot get reprogrammed, Sarah goes all like super crazy berserk and kills a bunch of the bad robots. And then all of her friendly robots that were also captured at the same time, even though they were in a different place, they decide that she's now dangerous and that they're not going to help her because she just killed a bunch of robots in front of them, I guess, even though they were bad robots. Anyway.
Robot morals.
Yeah. So then Zero, the leader of the bad robots, basically tries to throw Sarah into the biodigester thing where they normally throw apples to convert them into biofuel. And she manages to hang on and escape being thrown into there just long enough for Papa Robot to come and, you know, smash into Zero, even though he was apparently reprogrammed a minute ago, but I guess it didn't take something like that. Anyway, and then Sarah escapes back to Eden Zero, and RoboDog is there, and he has another video of Dr. Fields to show her, and it basically reveals that his consciousness, when he was about to die, was transferred into a robot, and that robot's name is Dun Dun Dun. Zero.
Oh, okay.
Remember Zero, the king of the bad robots?
Yes, yeah.
I said it would come up later.
It came up immediately after.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like three lines later. But.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's a line that that Zero says about something like there can be no peaceful existence as long as humans exist or something like that. And Dr. Field says that same thing in this video right before it's revealed that he is in fact Zero.
Oh, okay.
His wife and child died, I guess, and that's probably why he was so negative and down on humanity or something. I mean, humanity did pretty much destroy the world, but they also created the robots that rebuilt the world, so I don't know. Whatever. There's one episode left, and it's interesting enough. This episode was a little heavy-handed in the plot department, pushing things along. I would guess if you just binged the series, it probably wouldn't bother you as much, but because this episode just feels a little light on actual story, I'm a little disappointed with it.
Things just kind of happened.
But yeah, hopefully that means that they're saving the good stuff for the final episode, right? Mm. So the final episode's going to be good. I have hopes. Anyway,
well, tune in next week to find out.
Yeah, that's Eden. What is next? I dropped my paper.
Now is My Hero Academia. Speaking of fights and stuff. But we're done with the endless tournament battles
I know.
In this current moment.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah, that stuff's kind of nice. Yeah, I don't know. They kind of pick up from that last battle. They kind of have a short section where they, you know, kind of review what happened. And then, I mean, I'm sure there's more that happened, but the next big part is Deku's sort of training with Bakugo and All Might's there, and Deku's having trouble conjuring One for All's quirk ever since he had the other quirk happening. And so Bakugo's getting all impatient that he can't,
Wait, is that what it was? I misunderstood that scene then.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I took away from it, that like he kept trying to like, you know, do his classic like One for All like, you know, thing, and
I thought he was trying to do the other thing. Yeah. The thing that was the bad thing. Mm. I don't know. I might have misunderstood.
They mentioned One for All, and the name of the episode too was like One for All and something else. I forget.
Something. All for One, I think. Not One for All.
Oh, was it? Okay.
It was about All for One.
Well, you know, dyslexia. But this is also episode 100. I don't know what significance.
Episode 100.
What significance that really has, but it's a landmark of sorts.
We're finally 100 episodes in. We can finally get back to actually telling a story.
It's like one of those shows, like, man, you got to check out My Hero. Just once you get past the 100 episode mark, like, it gets so good.
Yeah, watch like the first season and then just skip to episode 100 and just go from there. You'll be fine.
Oh, God, yeah. You don't miss anything. It's not entirely true, but anyway, so we might be, correct us if we're wrong. We might be,
I don't remember exactly.
One of us might be off on that. Anyway, needless to say, he's having trouble doing his thing, one way or the other.
Yeah.
So we're not sure what's going on with that. And then there's a scene where, what's his name? I forget his name.
Eraser?
Yeah, yeah. Eraserhead.
No. No.
Elephant Man.
No.
Wait. Which
do you want to know his actual name?
Which David Lynch movie is he from?
Dune.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Baron Harkonnen.
Oh,
is his name?
Wow, I misjudged him. Yeah, in the wrong way.
He's on this piece of paper somewhere.
Yeah, Eraser.
There's so many characters.
Eraser, whatever his name. Everyone has multiple names, but he summons Deku along with Monoma
from Class B.
Yeah, the guy that's obnoxious and wears a tuxedo and
a jackass.
Yeah, just kind of rude and annoying. But yeah, he summons him with Eri there, little Eri with her little, you know, her little single horn to see if he can copy her quirk. Just to see, like, hey, can you do that? That'd be nice if you could do that.
So that was part of the recap of the fight as well. Was Monoma was saying that Deku's ability quirk was a blank.
Yeah.
And then they sort of explain more what that is after this.
Yeah, which Deku kind of took as a slight against him or something. Mm. He's like, what are you trying to say, man?
I mean, he didn't really seem to get very upset about it in the moment, but...
Yeah, but he was just like, what? Like, what does that mean? Mm. And he explains what that means. Like, he can only copy quirks that are basically taken... Well, the way I understood it is that quirks that are taken at face value. Like, if there's like an A, then B, like... scenario for a quirk, then like he can't do it. But if it's like, oh, I can just conjure fire, or
it was something like, if it's something where you have to build something up to use it,
yeah,
then he can't copy it.
It's so like a multi-step process.
They said like fat gum, for example, he couldn't copy that ability because it required him to build up all the fat in the first place or whatever.
Yeah.
And Deku, he couldn't copy it because it requires him to build up that energy that he does, I guess.
And yeah.
I don't know on Ari. Ari?
Ari.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I kind of forget exactly what her quirk does. Like, I remember it's like...
She absorbs...
Can be self-destructive.
She, like, absorbs energy or something like that? Isn't that... I'm trying to... So there was the fight that from last season where she's just basically sucking the life force out of Deku so that he can actually go like 100%, which he normally can't control because it's too much power.
So she was like a limiter or like a stopgap on
a power absorber of some sort.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what.
So I understand that. And then by absorbing all that power, then she can do something with it or she just does that. I don't know.
I'm not 100% sure on that.
Exactly.
But
yeah, they definitely had some synergy going on there.
But yeah, because her power absorbs another power or something, he couldn't copy it, I guess, because it requires some, I don't know. Not 100% on that. Anyway, so that scene happens and things are explained a little bit more about what he meant by blank.
Yeah, which I assume that's the purpose of this scene, because it's like, I thought they were going to work on trying to train Eri and like, you know, foster that power in her. But instead, like the way this comes off is like, we don't know what to do. We thought maybe we'd try this, like see if that could work.
Yeah.
In the short term, I suppose.
Well, what Eraser says is that, oh, I thought maybe if he could, you know, copy her power, then he could learn how to use it. And then he could then in turn teach her how to use it. Apparently the plan, but
which makes sense. But that didn't work. And so then we move on to what I have here, the last half of the episode, which I thought was like kind of weak. Anyway, so Bakugo and Todoroki have been having to do the makeup exams for get their provisional licenses or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like the stragglers of the class, which is kind of funny. Like they're both really powerful, but need to work another facets.
Well, they had to miss their practicals for whatever reason. I don't even remember.
Yeah, it's been so freaking long. Like, you know, in universe, it feels like it's been an eternity from whenever that happened. But anyway, so they are doing their like finals for that. And then just by happenstance, there's a team of villains who are like causing havoc and they get an opportunity, you know, in that moment to do something about it. There's no other heroes around. And so they go in there and they kick butt and they save the day, and it's really not much of an inconvenience for them. And it was a very convenient way for them to show their mettle, I suppose.
Yeah. There was something else that happened that wasn't mentioned. What was it about? I don't know. Whatever, I forgot. I didn't take any notes on this one because I fell way behind this week. So,
fair enough.
So I've got no notes to remind me what it was I was going to say.
Yeah, that probably is something else. But that's all I got.
The whole power absorbing thing with Harry and... I swear there was some talk about All for One. Oh, that was part of it, I guess, was that they're talking about how Ares power came from All for One, and so did ultimately Deku's power came from All for One.
Yeah.
And that they're both blank or whatever. Like, they were sort of making a comparison there between the two.
That's true.
Which was, I don't know, worthy of note, I guess. And God, there was something else though too. The kids are in the dorm and they're like, oh, I wonder what's happening with Bakugo and Todoroki.
Oh yeah, there is like a, they have like some sort of mixer or something with the class 1A and 1B. They're all like mingling and talking about the fights and stuff. And then I think, yeah, that comes up of, and that's probably the segue into what's Todoroki and Bakugo are doing. But
yeah, they were basically saying like, oh, I wonder how they're doing on their exams. And then it shows the scene with Todoroki and Bakugo talking with All Might and saying, well, these bad guys are here and you can't fight because, you know, you're All Might, but we just got our provisional licenses. So as long as you're here, we can. And then they, you know, beat up the fizzy soda guy. And, there was something else. Dang it.
Well, get in the comments because we're moving on.
Tune in next week where I'll remember. And no, probably not. So then next up we've got, I've been killing slimes for 300, blah, 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 blah.
And my arms are tired.
This one is episode 10 of 12. The title of this episode is A Minstrel Came to Town. And that is pretty much what my notes say. A minstrel came to town.
A minstrel lady.
You are right.
What do I win?
Any other guesses on this minstrel lady?
She joins the family.
Two for two. Let's go again.
Did they ever get a bigger house? Cause that's what I haven't seen this show, but I'm concerned about the ghost not getting enough privacy.
I mean, she's like super powerful magician. She can just like magic some rooms up, I think, if she really needs to.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know that the ghost needs a room. She can just float around.
Ghosts need privacy too.
But she doesn't sleep or anything, you know? If she wants privacy, she can just go float. She can float like 20 feet up in the air and no one's there, right?
That's true. I'm just saying.
All right.
But that's all I got.
That's all you got? So this is a rabbit-eared girl. She's got rabbit ears.
Okay.
Okay. And she is, yes. And, she is a minstrel that, plays basically this universe's version of death metal on a flying V shaped lute.
I'm in,
and
this
her name
is finally appealing to me.
Her name is Cuckoo.
Cuckoo.
I don't know. Just Cuckoo.
Cuckoo.
That's her name. The metal that they play isn't really good. It's supposed to sound bad because nobody likes it, basically, right?
I see.
Yeah.
It's creating a raucous.
Yes. And anyway, so she's been playing music for a long time and she's considering giving up playing music basically getting a job at a hostess club because rabbit ear girls are in high demand in hostess clubs, as one would expect, I suppose.
Don't quit your day job.
and Azusa basically talks her out of that and says, no, if music is your passion, then just, you know, stay here for a while you figure out, you know, what you need to do. And Blue Dragon Girl is apparently a big fan of the minstrel scene, which is sort of compared to the idol scene in Japan, you know?
Oh, okay.
Where you've got those people that are like just really into all the idol groups and can name all of them. Anyway, she's the only person that's actually heard of this girl, Cuckoo, whose stage name is something different that I don't even remember. But anyway, she offers her like some advice on basically how to sell out and play music that people will like. but then rabbit-eared girl Cuckoo says, you know, I've been playing this heavy death loop metal for so long that I don't know how to write any other kind of songs. So then Azusa says, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll have everyone in the family write a song for you and then we'll perform them And so they do this, and it's like a little show, and they all perform different songs. And then
it sounds like how Saint Anger got made. Not good. But continue.
And anyway, and so they do that, and she listens to all of them, and she's like, yeah, none of them are really quite my style or whatever. And then Beelzebub shows up and says, hey, there's this big festival, and we need a headlining act. How about you, Rabbit-Eared Girl? And so Rabbit-Eared Girl goes and plays at this festival, and she basically sort of combines all of the different ideas of all the different songs together and becomes really popular. And, yep. I guess that's about it. What else? What else do my notes say? Let me see if there's anything else I need to say.
So it all works out. She plays her death metal and they like it.
Yeah.
She just needed the right venue.
Yeah. At the end of my notes, actually. So I've got like the line that says, you know, she's been playing death metal for so long. She doesn't know how to write different songs. And then they do this thing and, or Azusa suggests that they do this thing. And my last line says they do, it does. And blah, blah, blah. You know how this goes.
Yada, yada.
It's literally what it says in my notes.
So on and so forth.
You know how this goes. It's pretty obvious what's going to happen here. Anyway, but yeah, so she's not really a member of the family because she's off touring because she's now a famous minstrel.
I see.
But she was sort of temporarily added to the family while she figured out how to write pop songs instead of play heavy metal.
So she's ditched the metal?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's sad. Metal's really big worldwide. I don't know. I don't get the message here.
And then the Blue Dragon Girl does play like a death metal song at the end for some reason.
She's keeping it alive.
No. Anyway, we can probably move on from that to Shadow's House, episode number 10 of 13. This episode is entitled The Final Pair.
I like this show.
Yeah.
And I liked this episode.
It was kind of the title was kind of a mislead.
Yes, because we had assumed based on the number, you know, roughly the number of times we heard the bell ring last time, that's, you know, all the other Shadows couples had been, passed,
right.
Made it. But one of them did not, tragically, but that happens a little later in this episode.
Yeah, that's true.
Trying to think. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, essentially, like, they have like 10 minutes left, and Edward is Emilico and Kate.
Right.
And Edward's like, he's closing the gate. He's like, you know, there's not enough time. Like, they can't, you know, I've made that journey, and, you know, you can't get here by on foot that quickly. So it's over.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah, there's no way.
And then he gets a raven from the higher ups, shadow people, and is like, you better look upstairs, go up on the lookout and see what's happening. And he does that, and he sees that Kate and Emilico have fashioned the wagon that Emilico, you know, had the foresight to get into like a little boat. And Kate is revealing that she has more Shadows powers than previously thought. She's sort of helping them along this little river that's, I don't know, it's almost like built like an aqueduct or something.
Yeah.
Like, has like concrete sides and everything, so she's able to like use, I don't know, she's just like shooting the shit out of her hand like Spider-Man's webs or something, and just like propelling them along, and they
I thought she was mainly using that to stabilize them,
stabilize.
So they didn't run into the walls or something.
Oh, that could be. Yeah,
but, yeah,
yeah, either way. Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, then they come in hot. It's like a downward slope, and Emilico is like, shouldn't we like, you know, do something? And she's like, no, we're going for it. And they just ramp it, and they both go like flying in the air. And then a really cool scene where Kate reveals she can make soot wings. And she looks like some sort of gothic angel.
Dark angel thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a cool visual. And so she saves Emilico and like, you know, is holding her in her arms and then lands. And then I was like, you know, her clothes are supposed to be clean. And she shot out these wings out the back. So I'm like, well, I don't know. How carefully did you do that? But
well, the front of her clothes were clean.
That's true. Is it just what you see?
No, it was. They sort of talked more about her soot control and how good she was at it and everything. And when they showed the wings sort of dissolve, all of the particles seemed to go away from her.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she maybe has that much soot control that she was able to just keep it from getting on her altogether by pushing it away as she dissolved the wings or whatever. That's sort of the impression I got, is that she was in control of it enough that...
And she had concealed that fact.
Yes.
And then...
Which makes some people not happy with her.
Yeah, yeah. Edward mainly. Yeah. And then, because I think he was like, he definitely didn't want Kate to pass, but he didn't want everyone to pass.
And they reveal a little bit more about why, particularly Kate and Emilico, they didn't want them to pass, and why Rum and Shirley, they didn't want them to pass. Like, those were the main ones that they didn't want to pass.
Yeah.
They talk crap about all the other guys, too.
Yeah.
But
those are just at the bottom.
Those were, like, the main ones that they didn't want to pass. And, I don't know. I mean, they talk about how Emilico and Kate are different, and the fact that she didn't reveal her soot power and everything means that she's sort of rebelling against the Shadow's House.
Yeah.
In some way. And then with Rum and Shirley.
Yeah.
Well, then we get to what happened with them. They did not make it in time. They were wandering slowly through the maze, holding hands, just, you know, having a good old time.
Yeah, and Shirley is, you know, utters her first words to Rum, and they sort of have a moment. But then it's revealed after the fact, or during, I forget, but it's revealed that Shirley's fate was already decided at the start of the debut, that she was already, like, withering. Because she had failed to form a connection with her doll, or she had failed to, with her soot powers, she had failed in some way. I'm not exactly sure.
She was just, I guess, too weak or something like that. I think is something, I forget exactly how they phrased it. It wasn't exactly that, but she didn't form a connection with the doll, and she didn't really have any soot control or anything like that. She just sort of failed to launch, I guess, as far as the family was concerned.
And at the end of her life, she finally starts to, like, come around and, like, awaken or whatever, but it's and form a connection with the Rum, or start to, but then it's too late. And pretty effective scene of her, you know, kind of in Shirley's hands, just disintegrating.
In Rum's hands.
Shirley disintegrates
sort of
and
turning into ash, basically.
Yeah. And the way they do it is like, Rum is like holding her hand
and it just sort of
detaches
off.
Yeah. it was pretty, I felt it. It was, I didn't tear up or anything, but it was, it worked. It was effective.
It was, and that happened before we heard all this other stuff.
That's true.
That's true. A lot more powerful because we're like, what the hell is going on?
Like, I thought they were good. I thought
and
they
then,
passed.
And then they sort of explain it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, we do get a bit of exposition in the latter half of this episode. But I guess after that, Kate and Emilico, you know, they barely make it. And so they are ushered into this hall where everyone's celebrating, and there's like a lot more Shadows people there. And we learn that, like, since they've passed, they're now entering this like first level of Shadows members. I forget, they call it like kindergarten or a nursery or
children's ward or something. Yeah. I don't remember, something like that.
Yeah. So there's like a tiered
Children's wing, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. Something like that.
I think Edward gets put in charge of the children's wing.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's what they call it.
And so that leads us to Edward meets with so while they're at this, they're hobnobbing. They're given this coffee. Like a celebratory coffee, and they're like, Kate and Emilico both drink it, and they're like, it's bitter. And like, you'll love it once you get used to it.
Right. And well, Kate doesn't drink it. She takes a sip and is like, it's too bitter. I'd rather have tea or something.
Okay. She doesn't drink it.
Yeah. And then Emilico drinks hers, and she also drinks Kate's because she doesn't want to waste it or whatever. So,
yeah. Sounds like you.
I don't like wasting things either. You're right.
I love wasting things.
I bet you do.
I love wasting away.
I love getting wasted. I don't know. Sorry.
In the latter half of this episode, after that, we see Edward meet with, he has like a conversation with some of the other Shadows people, but, he meets with, the head, I forget what his name is, the Lord Emperor or whatever.
Grandfather.
Yeah. I can't remember his title. Yeah. Seems like he should have more of a title than grandfather.
Grandfather.
But it is a Shadows family, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
In that regard. And as like you said, he gets promoted, but then there's like clearly like, you know, he gets kind of kicked around by some of these other people that are in, you know, grandfather's, you know, upper echelon.
Yeah. I mean, they're all, they're all a bunch of shit talkers from what we've seen so far. Anyway, yeah. You know?
Yeah. But they really see that Edward is, despite, you know, to us being, you know, this sort of, you know, mysterious and questionably dubious fellow, is like kind of lower on the rung of, the power, I don't know the word I'm looking for.
Ladder.
Yes. Power ladder. Yes.
Power Man 3000.
When worlds collide.
Power of love.
I kept thinking power. I can't remember what I was thinking of. Anyway.
Structure? Hierarchy?
Yeah. I kept thinking something that was wrong. These are a lot of power ladder, power hierarchy.
So Power Man 3000 wasn't wrong, is what you're saying?
That was right on the money. That I'm talking about.
Lola versus Power Man 3000. All right, sorry. Derailing again. I feel us getting close to the end of the episode, so I'm derailing.
We learn about this coffee is the other thing.
Yes.
And it's essentially like brainwashing coffee that like that only works on dolls.
Yeah.
So it was kind of irrelevant that Kate didn't drink it, but more symbolic, I suppose.
Yeah. But I thought it was worth pointing out that Emilico drank a double dose.
Yeah. So she had a bunch. And then they sort of reveal when they're sort of talking about this coffee, because they have some concerns about people. It's like, oh, what are we going to do if, you know, these people don't, you know, stay in line? It's like, well, we can control the dolls, so there's no issue there. The problem is if the doll before that, it has an emotional effect on the Shadows member and, you know, changes them, you know, their moral center, or inspires them to break the mold, essentially.
Right.
Which clearly Emilico is a special character and we love her. And her and Kate have, you know, and well, Kate also reveals after this, I think, that she purposefully didn't name Emilico a similar name to hers. Wow.
It is windy as F out. I was just like, what is that noise?
Like, I don't know if you saw me looking up throughout the episode, but I kept seeing like lightning flashes. I'm like, what is going really? On out there? I was like looking at my weather.
No, I heard the noise and I was like, is like some fan just turn on or something? What the heck is going on? It sounds like a computer. Like,
yeah.
Like a big computer fan or something. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're fine.
It was distracting.
It's still going.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Just going to have to be in it.
Yeah, that's fine. We've talked about it, so it now exists in universe.
I'm cutting all this out. Just this wind part.
Just everything after Spider is gone.
This episode's gonna be real easy to edit. I'm kidding. Anyway, Kate, I think she's talking to Emilico, and she kind of tells her, or she's talking to herself, I don't remember, but she reveals to us that she purposefully named Emilico something that was not related to her name, because typically it's, and so there's something going on there where she knows more than we did going into this, and maybe she's trying to break the mold, or like she's purposely, and she kept her soot powers hidden. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued by that. There's more going on with Kate. You know, she's kind of been like, we haven't got a lot out of her. She's a silent type, or maybe not like Shirley, but she's at least plays her cards close to her chest. So, yeah.
She's a Shadows House revolutionary.
That's right.
That's what she is.
That's right. So
and then all the dolls are brainwashed. We didn't really mention that, but
yes, and they get these fuzzy eyes.
Yeah,
they're like all fuzzy and it's the scribbly,
the soot in their eyes.
Yeah,
similar to when they got the soot sickness in earlier episodes. It was sort of the same thing, except this soot is being controlled by Grandfather, because it's soot that Grandfather produced to put in their coffee. So Grandfather is ultimately in control.
I see.
Yes,
special soot,
Grandpa soot.
And then, I forgot to mention, okay, and so the very end of the episode, the cliffhanger is like Kate and Emilico are back, you know, to normal life, in quotes, and Kate is cleaning, and she's like, oh, I'm getting so good at this. And then Kate asks her, like, don't you think it's weird that, I forget what she says, that something about her friends or, about Shirley and Rum, like what they're going to do with Rum.
Oh, yeah.
They're just going to dispose of her, and they show her fuzzy eyes, and she's just like, Nope, that's, you know, if a Emilico. Doll can't serve its master, it must be
Kate is basically saying to Emilico, oh, you must be really sad about what happened with Rum.
Yeah.
And Shirley, because they were your friends. And Emilico says what you're saying.
So yeah, she's clearly been, the coffee clearly worked.
Yeah.
And so this is interesting. Like, now I imagine we're going to shift perspectives, I presume, to Kate. Because Emilico is now, you know, now it's, that's what I'm imagining is going to happen.
I don't know how permanent this effect is, but yeah, maybe.
I am just imagining Kate's going to have to save her, you know, in some fashion.
Probably. Yeah.
But I also wanted to mention, cause they talk, when Edward's meeting with Grandfather and all that, they sort of lay out a bunch of exposition about what the Shadows people are. And how the dolls interact with them.
Yeah, that's true. There's
they call lot. Shadows are, quote, parasitic fairies, which that's a fun phrase. But yeah, so they're parasitic fairies, and they interact with the dolls like they can literally, like, you know, take over the doll's body, which we already kind of knew.
You already knew that. Yeah.
But I just thought I just had to shout out parasitic fairies. That's fun. That could almost been the show name.
Would have been a little too revealing, I suppose.
Maybe. That sound cool. Like, oh yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, my only note really says this show's finally gotten around to taking that darker turn that we've been expecting since like episode 2.
Yeah.
Not that it hasn't had a little bit here and there, but like this is definitely like the dark turn.
Yeah.
And then we've got like 3 episodes left after this, so yeah, we'll see how dark it can get. I don't imagine a whole lot darker, but you know, it could.
It could, yeah. I'm definitely enjoying it. Like the way they've kind of plotted everything out has been satisfying for me, and I was excited after the end of this, being like, "How many are left?" And yeah, we got a whole 3 episodes. So I'm like, "All right, this is like I'd said earlier. I think we both agreed earlier on in this show. Like I like where it's going, but I don't know if I feel like I'm in good hands necessarily. I'm not sure. I can't say one way or the other, but at this point I'm like, all right, I trust you guys. Let's see how you stick this landing.
Yeah. And it has been slow paced, but it's not a bad slow pace, I don't think. Like it's been well paced, just that the pace is a little slow, I guess.
But yeah, it's been, those reveals have been nice, I think. Like just very little, like you were saying, until this one where it's like, we get a whole lot more.
A whole lot all at once, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the concern is that once everything is revealed, I mean, about the world, that is like, what do you do then? Like,
right. Yeah.
What kind of show is it after that?
So the worry for me is that, is this season going to resolve things, or are we in for like a second season? And I think at this point, with there only being 3 episodes left, there has to be a second season.
Yeah.
Or there has to be, let me say, another season instead of a second season, so that I can then compare it to The Promised Neverland, that very similarly, you know, just last few episodes, stuff went crazy and they just wrapped it up, right?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping they don't do that with this.
Yeah.
But they could.
Yeah, I'm hoping
that
not.
That would be
either.
Disappointing. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's Cloverworks. I think they're, I mean, not that they wrote it or anything, but. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna trust them. I definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah. I mean, it could go one of 2 ways. It could resolve some things, but leave it very open for another season, which I would be more okay with, although I'd be a little disappointed if it didn't get wrapped up sufficiently to feel like the end of a season. Or it could go like super hyper, wrap everything up and be done with it, which would be more disappointing, I think. So I don't know.
I imagine for me, it'd be more at the end of the season, like resolving Emilico's, you know, brainwashing, you know, Kate going on some sort of, you know, covert, I don't know, some sting operation, you know, some sort of quest to do that, while at the same time revealing a little bit more about, you know, the underpinnings of this hierarchy and how it all works. And then like, maybe that would just kind of be the cliffhanger of the season. Like they finally come back and they have a better footing to take on this. Cause they can't
but don't they have to like escape or something? Like they can't, I don't know.
I guess. I think they're going to have to take it out from within. Like that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Cause you brought up Promised Neverland, which is from the very beginning. Once they find out what's going on, it's like, yeah, we need to get out of here.
Right.
But this show is so much like, I just don't think that's an option. But it could, I mean, it could be, but like, I feel like it's more like we have to turn this on its head, like show them, you know, what, I don't know, that love's important, you know, or something like that. Like, that's what I'm expecting, but.
I'm trying to refrain from singing Gloria Estefan because you said something that made me think of turn the beat around.
Love to hear percussion.
Anyway, something about turning it around. And that song just came into my head and that's all I could think of. And I had to try not to sing it. And then I did. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week. Unless you have something else. We're done.
Yeah, I think we're done.
All right. That's it. We're done. Bye. Just kidding. I always got to do my spiel at the end. So we're on all the social media platforms that I mention all the time. We have a Patreon. We got a new patron. We should have mentioned
that. We did.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a new patron. Thank you so much for your patronage. Demons?
Yep.
Okay. So, yes,
thank you. Thank you much.
Demons isn't the name of the person that gave it. It's just...
That's just a salutation.
Yeah, in Georgeland. Yeah. Anyway, you can reach us on all the social media platforms if you have anything that you want to tell us or if you want to tell us we're wrong. I guess that's still you telling us something. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I have to go to the bathroom and the episode is over. So enjoy this outro music. Say goodbye, George.
Goodbye, George. Thank you.